and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning, lurking conservatives. I want to say a special good morning to our station in New Orleans, WSMB, primarily because the reason I'm speaking in this tone and the reason I'm so jacked up is that they sent these 4 boxes or 5 boxes or 20 boxes of I don't know what they were, these giant U-shaped donuts covered with sugar and pralines and maple syrup. I don't know what the hell it is, but they've lasted for a week. They're filled with butter and sugar, and there was one sitting up there in the Majority Report's office, and I ate half of it. All right, so that's where I'm at, Riley. And also, my computer didn't work. Can't find my soy milk. I'm not going to say thank God it's Friday because that's sort of hacky, but man, I understand this work week thing, and today did not start great for me, Riley. And where were you during all this? Not paying attention to me. Where was Kalo? Down here with his own problems. So now I'm going to make America pay for it.
Wait a minute. I thought yesterday you were complaining about the soy milk because you saw little creatures in it.
Okay, well, fine. Little creatures is fine, but now I have no little creatures. I don't even have the option of being critical of my soy milk because it disappeared.
It disappeared?
I think that refrigerator in that room, in that lounge.
I don't know why you keep anything in that refrigerator.
I think it ate it. I think that something.
I'm not surprised.
I don't know what is going on in that refrigerator, man, but something has to be done. I don't know where you work or where you're heading to or what your home looks like, but this refrigerator over here at the station, it's one of those things where I think it's gotten to the point where the person who's supposed to clean it, it's frightened. But you know, like everyone's in there, like, wow, is anyone going to do anything about this?
And
you literally cannot walk into that lounge, into that public area without going, oh, dude, someone's got to do something about that. What's going to happen? Is the thing going to turn green?
It's got halitosis.
I don't know what.
I mean, it smells. You open it up, it smells awful. And that's because people keep stuff in there for weeks on end.
You know,
they forget it's there. It starts growing hair and green stuff on it. And nobody cleans it out.
I can't trust my mind. I cannot trust my mind. I'm learning so many things about how the you know how the brain works when you're a smart person but you're an undisciplined person. I cannot believe what I went through the other night. This was like the night before last. I'm going to bed. You know, whenever I go to bed at 7, you know, with the kids. And there's still kids playing on the street. I'm going to bed. There's a banging going on. All right, there's a banging.
On your radiator?
No, it's not. No, the radiators aren't on. It's 90 degrees out.
But no, that doesn't matter. You can still get bangs out the radiator when it's 90 degrees. Don't think that has anything to
do with it. I never heard that. But the system, I don't think the radiation system's on, but I'm hearing this bang, and it's a thunk, thump, thump. Someone's hammering something, all right? So I think I know it's not the next-door neighbor. They just moved in, but they're not doing it. I know it's not the people upstairs. It's coming from downstairs, all right? It's coming from downstairs. Now, here's my thought pattern. I think it's coming from downstairs. I know the guy downstairs. The guy downstairs is the guy that came up. Remember I told you about that when I was having an argument with my wife?
Mm-hmm.
The guy who came up and was like, everything okay? Wife beater? You know, like, you remember I was yelling, and I wasn't even yelling at her, but he got concerned and gave me that look and made me feel guilty. This dude, he's a heavy cat, all right? But here's where my brain goes. I got 3 cats, Riley. These cats are running around all night long. I have to assume that downstairs they're going crazy because you can hear cats scuttling across the floor all night long, all right?
Okay.
So the fact that this guy hasn't said anything about it makes me believe that he's doing me a favor, all right? So I'm hearing this banging. All right, so I figure it's that guy. Now I'm thinking, I can't go down there and tell that guy anything because he's going to rat me out on the cats, which I'm not supposed to have in the building, and he already thinks I'm a wife beater. All right,
so
all this is going on, and I can't sweep because I think he's banging on his walls. But all right, so this is the whole conspiracy goes like this. All right, that's how the conspiracy goes. If I go down there and talk to him, he's going to rat me out my cats, and then he's going to look at me like he's going to kick my ass. You know, all right, so here I can't sweep. So you know what happens? My wife goes, you want me to go down and talk to him?
Oh.
What did I say?
Yeah.
Yeah. I said, yeah. I said, why don't you go down and talk to him? Help me out. Because I figure how can she turn him? Then I'm sitting there going, that dude's he's a Latin guy. He's never going to respect me again. He didn't respect me to begin with. But now I'm sending my wife down to do my dirty business.
Sheriff right? Mishner.
Unbelievable. So it turns out, guess what? I'm wrong about everything. It's Luis, my super, pounding on the roof. All right? So this is just, I think the reason I'm talking about this is that the conspiracy theory model, the way I think, is faulty. And a lot of people think like that. But the assumptions that you make on speculative information can be so wrong, it's mind-blowing. And this happens in every area of my life. But if it weren't for that, I wouldn't be creativity. So I'd like to look at this as the way my imagination works and the reason why I'm creative as opposed to wrong and full of it.
Did you step to Lewis? The super?
Oh, God.
Who was banging on the roof?
If
the banging was the problem, you have to speak to the source of the banging.
No, I have no problem with Louis.
He's a dentist, right?
No, that's no, Carlos.
He's the owner.
Carlos, the landlord, is the dentist who I ran into on the street. I said, "How's business?" Because he's put his office in our building, and he put a big neon tooth in the front of it, in the front window of our
which
building.
Which flashes and keeps him up at night.
There's a neon tooth holding a toothbrush in front of my building. All right, I see him on the street. I go, "How's business?" And he goes, "Everybody's got a mouth." All right, so.
Oh my God, everybody's got a mouth.
This is the guy that looked into my neighbor's oven when she complained it wasn't working and said if it was a mouth I could fix it. Alright. He's a poet, this guy. Alright, so let's talk about Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist has decided to support a bill to expand federal financing of embryonic stem cell research. This is new. This might force a confrontation with the White House, which is threatening to veto the measure. He says that while he has reservations about altering Bush's four-year-old policy, which placed strict limits on taxpayer finance of the work, he supports the bill nonetheless. Is he being a doctor? Is he being a politician? What's he doing, Riley?
He's trying to be a centrist. He realized that all of this Terry Schiavo stuff that he went out and championed, all of those religious conservatives he spoke to, were not going to by themselves get him in the White House in 2008. So he takes a 180-degree turn from a position he took just a week ago on stem cell research, and now says he's in favor. Now, I would like to think, Mark Maron, that maybe he talked to Arlen Specter, senator from Pennsylvania, who has cancer.
He is a doctor. Bill Frist is a doctor.
Yeah.
And he actually said, quote, that the limitations Bush put on, I'm not quoting yet, the limitations Bush put on the bill in 2001 will eventually, quote, slow our ability to bring potential new treatments for certain diseases. Therefore, I believe the president's policy should be modified, end quote.
Yeah, and he is the person that has the power to bring this to the floor. He is the majority leader. Without his decision to put this up for consideration, it would not happen. Now it really does, in fact, have a shot at passage.
Now let's not forget that that Bill Frist's family owns a very large, a for-profit hospital chain. HCA is Bill Frist's family's hospital chain. So this guy has interest. And, you know, on some level, you got to think that it's not only is stem cell research necessary to move medicine forward, but it is also, it's a big new frontier of medical business. And on some level, maybe he's not just being a centrist. Maybe he's saying, hey, I probably screwed up pretty good. I might as well sort of prepare for my future in the healthcare business.
Well, yeah, you know, in case he doesn't get elected president in 2008,
he's never going to be president.
Certainly in the realm of possibility. Let's just put it that way.
Well, in case he doesn't,
he now has a situation where his hospital chain can take advantage of whatever stem cell research is out here. And if more money is committed for this, both by the federal government and perhaps by private industry, he can make out like a bandit.
All right, so let's move on to this Energy Policy Act of 2005. 1,700 pages of energy bill contains tax credits worth nearly $14.6 billion to oil, natural gas, electricity, and renewable energy companies because God knows they need the money. The House vote was 275 to 156. The bill does, you know, it's a bad bill, man. It's a bad bill. You know why? It doesn't reduce U.S. dependence on foreign oil. It doesn't spend taxpayers' dollars wisely or respect the environment at all, really. There's a couple of concessions towards the end, but it's a bad bill.
The thing that people ought to be concerned about as far as energy is concerned is the effort by the Chinese oil company to buy UNOCAL. This is a story that's been flying below the radar. There's a provision in this energy bill that speaks to that issue because the Chinese are energy hungry. They are more energy hungry than we are because they got a bigger population. But this bill, as you pointed out, does nothing to deal with the central issue confronting the American people on energy, and that is alternative sources. Well, you know, you can argue about which alternative sources, but as long as we depend on fossil fuels, we're up the creek here.
And also, the bill wreaks havoc on the environment. It, like Riley just said, it doesn't do anything about, you know, it drops the ball completely on renewable energy. It gives away billions of dollars to oil companies. It makes a couple of concessions, but not out of the goodness of their heart, just because they couldn't push them through in terms of the environment and drilling in the Arctic. But we're going to cover this a little more in depth a little later. But another case of mad cow, folks. Another case of mad cow. Now, look, I put this on the back burner for a little while, all right? I wasn't freaking out about this, but I got to be honest with you. I'm freaked out again, okay? This is the third case in this country. All right. Third case of mad cow in this country. This is a cow being tested for mad cow disease. It never entered the food supply, the government says. Unlike the two confirmed cases of mad cow disease, this cow did not go to the slaughterhouse or to the feed mill. It was burned and buried after a local veterinarian removed brain tissue for testing. All right. The testing indicated that the disease may have been present in the cow. The department is conducting further tests at its laboratory in Ames, Iowa, and is sending tissue to be tested by the internationally recognized laboratory in Weybridge, England. We've heard this before. Now, the nuances of this story and where it gets shady is that, not unlike the last case where things got mixed up, like, you know, they didn't know where the remains were, some blood tissue got mixed with another blood tissue, there's some shady business in this one, too, because it's almost like the Kennedy assassination when you look at these mad cow cases. There are so many things that seem ridiculous, shady, you know, things forgotten. The guy had the brain in the freezer, the farmer had the brain in the freezer, and just it slipped his mind that he had to get a check for mad cow. The farmer! And there's more. 17 past the hour, you're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We'll be back in a second.
Morning Sedition on the air and online. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Past the hour, we're going to have a Morning Sedition Radio Theater in just a few minutes. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
This is Morning Sedition. It is Air America Radio. It is Friday, and my day has already started to crumble. I don't know about yours. I hope you're having better luck with yours. But there's a third case of mad cow, and it gets, you know, the United States Department of Agriculture, the veterinarian who is part of the United States Department of Agriculture, convolutes these reports. I mean, this is a serious thing. I am not going to spend a week festering about it. I don't eat meat. You probably shouldn't either, because this stuff is here. And I can tell you right now that there's a massive cover-up around reporting these stories, because they always get shady. I mean, they always get shady. You listen to the chief veterinarian, John Clifford. This is from the last case. What was it, a month or so ago?
Mm-hmm.
The cow was labeled as the wrong breed because, A, it had been soiled with so much manure that it was hard to tell what breed it was. B, the tissue samples were mixed with other tissue samples from other cows. Parts from the diseased animal were supposed to be kept separate, but they somehow got mixed up with the remains of four other cows. How? Sabotage? I don't know. Now we get this new story, all right? This is from the cow in Texas. Or, oh, God, where was it? Where was it, Riley?
It was...
Where was it? I just lost everything.
Wait a minute. No, that was the Texas cow was last month.
This, yeah. All right. Well, look. So I'll tell you in a second. But the testing options are limited for this latest animal infected because the brain sample was preserved with formalin, making it unsuitable for all but one type of testing. This is the immunohistochemistry test. All right. In the time since this cow's death, the department has changed its rules and no longer allows tissue to be preserved in formalin. Samples now must be shipped immediately while they're fresh. All right. So testing in Ames, Iowa, the first test has indicated mad cow disease may be present. The sample did not look like a typical case of the bovine spongula. It did not have the normal distribution of certain elements of the disease, but they still think it has the disease. And it just keeps getting more shady. This animal died in April, but the veterinarian who removed the brain forgot to send in the sample until last week. All right. Now, the veterinarian for the USDA says, while that time lag is not optimal, it has no implications in terms of the risk to human health. Of course, they're going to say that. But the important thing is, Clifford, this is the veterinarian for the USDA, said the possibility of a new case should not hinder efforts to persuade Japan to lift a ban on U.S. beef. But I think the whole thing stinks, and both of these stories are confusing, and there's so many, it's like a comedy of errors with these mad cow cases, which leads me to believe that there's a cover-up of what really happened. It's convoluted.
Well, the only way that people know that cows get mad cow is from if that cow ends up eating some matter from another cow. In other words, as part of their feed. So even though the United States has supposedly banned the feeding of ground bones and that sort of thing to cattle, the fact remains we're still seeing mad cow disease in the food supply among these cows. And the fact of the matter is, it couldn't get there unless somebody was breaking rules here.
No, they can get there because other practices that many veterinarians dislike continue, such as feeding poultry litter with spilled cattle meal in it back to cattle, giving calves milk replacer made from cattle blood, and letting cows eat dried restaurant plate waste.
Yeah.
So there are loopholes here that is enabling cows to eat cows. Let's get to terrorism.
Yeah.
Come on, let's have an end of the world day here, you know? What do you say about London? They picked up 9 new suspects. We'll be bringing what the number is like 20. They picked up like 3 women. Am I right, Riley?
Yeah, they picked up 3 women. They have also picked up a guy on the Zambia-Zimbabwe border. Now, of course, this is pretty far away from England, but apparently this guy is suspected. He was linked to the July 7th bombings after he crossed into Zambia from Zimbabwe. This is according to a Zambian official. And again, 9 new suspects in Britain. And Tony Blair, the Prime Minister, is saying that there may well be another strike. And people are really, I mean, you know, the police have flooded the London trains. Because they are afraid that there is entirely possible that there will be another strike and another strike soon.
Well, you know what's weird about these arrests is that they nailed 6 guys in a huge arrest, and they nailed these they busted these 3 women for putting up terrorists. You know, it just reminded me immediately of you know, like, what kind of woman puts up a terrorist? I mean, they're not wives, but for some reason I got that weird thing in my head where, you know, how rock guys, like rock musicians, you know, sort of freeload off of women.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder
yeah.
if terrorists have the same sort of thing where they just sort of like, like, how come there's no food in the fridge? Shut up, I hate you. You love me. I'm a terrorist. Well, go ahead.
No, I mean, the other side, and the sad part of this is that the Brazilian electrician, who was killed by police in London, is going to have his funeral in Brazil today.
Mm-hmm.
His coffin was returned yesterday. And, of course, Tony Blair said there will be a full independent inquiry as to how that man was misidentified and killed like that.
Yeah, we got some flack coming in from the British Conservatives. A British Conservative spokesman, Richard Barnes, he's pissed off that the U.S. Justice Department has an Al-Qaeda guide posted on its website. And he said, quote, I hope the U.S. government will see sense and remove this immediately. We need to do everything we can to make London safe. Now, come on. Is Emmanuel really going to make a difference? Can't they find that information anywhere? We're going to get into that a little more. We've got Morning Sedition Radio Theater coming up. We're coming up. It's the penultimate episode in the Temple of Doom series, 27 past the hour, Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio. Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company players bring you their production of Mark Maron and the Temple of Doom. As we rejoin our story, Mark and Grace have continued their search for the Antichrist by tagging along with Marilyn Manson for his appearance on The Tonight Show.
Wow, Marilyn. Nice green room.
It's okay, but you're a big comedian, Mark. I'm sure you've been on The Tonight Show yourself.
Actually... No, never have.
Oh, really? Boy, this is awkward.
Do yourself a favor and don't get him started. Just tell us about the Antichrist.
Well, according to what I've studied, Grace, he may not look all that evil. He's actually supposed to be really popular.
You mean like George W.?
In fact, he's so popular, people will follow him into battles he declares for false reasons.
Yeah, yeah, like just like George W. Bush.
And he's supposed to set himself up in the Temple of God, which I guess means he either acts like God himself, or he'll just act really religious.
I got it. I got it. Oh, my God. The Antichrist really is President George W.
Oh, well, you'll probably never find anyone like that. Look, I gotta go get my makeup on.
But you're not going on for another 4 hours.
Exactly, I'm running late. Bye.
You're a big comedian, Mark. I'm sure you've been on The Tonight Show.
Let it go, big guy.
Sorry, was Marilyn Manson just in here?
Oh, hey, Jay Leno. Great to see you. I'm Mark Maron. Yeah, I played some of the same clubs you did, and I had a small part in Almost Famous. See, it's on my resume as angry promoter.
Oh, yeah, Mark, sure. Great to meet you finally. Thanks for stopping by.
Look, I know we're not supposed to be in the green room, but...
Don't worry about it. Make yourself comfortable.
Thanks, Jay. You're as nice as everyone says you are. Hey, listen, I got to tell someone. I've been running around the country trying to figure out who the Antichrist is, and I finally got it. It's George W.
All right, you got me on the Antichrist.
What?
It's me, the beast, 10 horns, 7 heads, 10 crowns upon my horns. I secretly control things, big money through the church of television. Hail Satan.
Jay Leno is the Antichrist?
Yeah, I never thought anyone would figure it out. I even did a jaywalking segment asking people on the street, who's the Antichrist? Of course, none of them got it. I love that segment.
But you seem so nice.
I am nice. I'm just a guy trying to entertain people and bring forth the end times. Hey, you want to meet Pam Anderson? She's right down the hall.
Pamela Anderson? Sure. Wait a minute. Do not tempt me, Satan.
Well, then, I got no choice but to summon the dark powers. Hectate, Rob Sham, Beelzebub, Spawn of the Underworld, rise forth!
Oh, my God! The earth is opening up!
The times of trials and tribulations is at hand, and I shall be cast into the lake of fire. Listen, you want a soda or a sandwich or something? I can send out one of the interns. Maybe some make cookies. Take as many as you want.
No thanks, Jay. I appreciate it. Boy, what a nice guy. Now, where was I? Oh, yeah.
Will Mark and Grace escape the apocalypse? Will Mark ever break down and admit he wants a sandwich after all? And after Leno retires, will America ever really accept Conan O'Brien as the new Antichrist? Find out next time when we hear Pamela Anderson say...
Jay says I should tell my fans to accept the Mark of the Beast. Isn't that a cute idea?
That's next time on the final episode of Mark Maron and the Temple of Doom. And stay tuned later for the Morning Sedition Radio Theater Company Players production of News Daddy. Supreme Court Justice.
I've heard all these arguments for overturning Roe versus Wade, and I've just got one question for the National Right to Life. Why have you got to be ripping on ladies? Counselor for the pro-choice organizations, do you have anything to say to this?
Yes, Your Honor. Our organizations believe that while abortion is never a happy choice, the Constitution allows for...
I see. Well, I've heard enough to render my verdict. It's in the opinion of the court that you are one stone-fine mama.
I dissent.
Shut up, Scalia. Now, baby, let's retire to my chambers, and I'll show you my briefs.
That's later on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
There you go. How do you like that? 38 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Hey, buddy. Fair America Radio's Morning Sedition program. That Matt Cowell case, it's not in there. They don't say where it is. That's all I wanted to say. I feel like corrected myself because they're keeping that under wraps. They're not saying the name of the farm, and they're not quarantining the farm either. That's all that's in that piece. I did a little research.
So think about that the next time you throw a burger on the grill.
Dude, I don't even want to talk
not
about
you.
That. Yeah. I'm close. This is the kind of thing that keeps me off of the meat, my friend, because I would eat literally everything. I would eat all day long if I could. Do you understand? If that New Orleans station, they sent that giant donut that's been sitting there for a week at WSMB in New Orleans, and it was great. They sent some coffee packets. I'm just telling you, thank you, because that's what's doing whatever's happening to me right now.
Okay.
Now, so what we're talking about here is the British conservatives are pissed off at the United States Justice Department for putting an Al-Qaeda guide on their website. Apparently... the manual includes advice on how to go undetected on crowded public transport, how to communicate and avoid detection by security services, how to transport weapons, how to stop the corrosion of explosives, right there on the Justice Department website. Now, obviously, this guy, Richard Barnes, a conservative spokesman for policing and resilience. I love the way they title things.
Resilience.
Title things. And how'd you like to be part of the policing and resilience
committee? I'm in charge of bouncing back.
He said he was horrified that the Justice Department was promoting, quote, full instructions on how to be an urban terrorist. Now, the Justice Department says parts of the manual have been withheld because it doesn't want to aid in educating terrorists. Does that mean what? The parts where they actually have the recipe for the bomb? I mean, now, what I want to know is this really an issue in terms of specifically the Justice Department, or is this a broader issue? It seems to me that this information is probably available anywhere. Am I right?
Well, look, it is probably available in other places. But what's interesting to me about this, Mark, is that these are fellow travelers arguing with each other. This is the British Conservative Party arguing with an obviously conservative American Justice Department. This is Alberto Gonzalez watch. This is going on.
Yeah, but I think that they have a secret covert agenda to maintain a level of fear and potential terrorism in the world so they can keep control. So, you know, on some level, I don't understand why it would be up there anyways. Really, as an example of what? That they caught it? That they found it? Why is it on the Justice Department site anyways? As a means of research? Why?
Well, probably to let people know that they're in action, that they're actually out here trying to do something
about terrorism. Here we are. See what we're doing about terrorism? We're helping you with some information if you want to be one.
Yeah. I mean, what other logical reason would there be? It's got to be that the Justice Department wants people to know that they're on top of things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
They X some stuff out. Well, here's, you know, the real problem is, I mean, that is just an issue of, is it an issue of censorship? Is it a silly issue? Can't they get that stuff anywhere? But the real problem is the Senate Judiciary Committee, listening to a new report from the Justice Department's Inspector General, has found that the FBI's backlog of untranslated terrorism intelligence doubled last year. And the time it takes the Bureau to hire translators has gotten longer. Right. The amount of that, this is mind blowing to me. None of the backlog material came in its highest priority investigations. Like, this is, wasn't hot, you know, hot off the press, hot intelligence. But the FBI has, quote, no assurance, unquote, that some 8,300 hours of untranslated material does not include information that could be critical to terrorism investigations. 8,300 hours just sitting there going, I don't know what they're saying. Do you?
The FBI's computer system has been a walking joke for years. The FBI, and I'm talking now among Washington bureaucracies, the FBI's computer system is a joke. And what you're seeing now is the effect of, I mean, they're talking about, in order to get all this stuff done, they would have to run through 2009. Through the Bush administration, what's left of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, Riley, it's just like this was supposed to be the biggest priority, is to get communications going, just even within the FBI, to get this computer up and running so we actually have a decent resource for information about terrorism, and to hire translators. Now, apparently they've hired a few more translators, but it's taking longer for them to hire them. And the real scary thing is the FBI was not the only counterterrorism agency that is under fire at this Judiciary Committee hearing. Apparently, at the office of John D. Negroponte, the director of National Intelligence, a program manager who runs the Information Sharing Environment Office, this is responsible for linking federal, state, and local offices to, you know, fight terrorism, told the committee that he only had one full-time employee and two contractors. This is 7 months after they created the place. One full-time employee. This is to connect all the intelligence agencies. It's retarded.
Well, I mean, this is how seriously these people take the recommendations. Remember something. All of this was part and parcel of the recommendations of the September 11th Commission.
Yep.
The fact that this stuff isn't getting done, the fact that there's all this backlog, the fact that Negroponte's office got nobody in it, essentially, that's all thumbing its nose at the September 11th Commission.
Where the hell's the money going? You know, there's so much money running around. We're going to talk about some of these subcontractors right after 9/11 that made a fortune off of the chaos and off of the disorganization of the Transportation Security Administration, that made a fortune off of security contracting. One in particular, this was an events planner that we're going to discuss this, because people made fortunes off of the death of those thousands of people that died on 9/11. Brian and Everett, I hope you can make me feel better. Are you there? Brian and Everett are our friend in Washington. Do you have a song?
I have a timely song, and I got to apologize for the last time I was on. Remember when I was all relaxed and balanced and floating through space and stuff?
And you were
like
talking
that?
About Uranus, the planet.
That's what the weed will do to you. So you got to stay off that stuff.
Okay, buddy. So
thanks for sharing, Brian.
Oh, okay. Here you go. Ready for this song?
I'm ready.
This is called It's Go Time, and this is about the secret clubhouses and the conspiracies and all that stuff.
Oh, great, great, great. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
In the secret clubhouse, the action team conspires. We've got to steal their secrets. We've got to tap the wires. We've got to send a message that we're one step ahead. And if we can't track their movements, they might as well be dead.
and it's go time. Let's do this. Say the warriors and terrorists too. Now this is what we live for, 'cause a man's gotta do what a man's gotta do.
Yeah, that's great.
He's looking at us funny, now he's not looking at all.
Yeah.
We're making him sweaty and nervous.
Yeah.
We're really on the ball. He must be up to something, 'cause he ain't doing nothing wrong. We gotta get him hooked in. We gotta make him sing that song.
Yeah.
And it's go time.
Yeah.
Let's do this.
Yeah,
there's a warriors and terrorists too.
Yeah.
Now this is what we live for. 'Cause a man's gotta do. What?
I was singing.
Oh, what a man gotta do.
Thank
okay.
you.
Hey.
What?
Nice chord structure.
It's beautiful. Is there a lot more?
There's one more verse.
Okay, all right.
In the secret clubhouse, cigars are passed around. They accomplished the objective. They took the wise guy down. The warriors and the terrorists are back to the very same. 'Cause they're here for the party, the big dance and the game. And it's go time. Let's do this. Say the warriors and terrorists too. Now this is what we live for. 'Cause a man's gotta do it.
We're singing.
Oh.
What a...
'Cause a man's gotta do what a man's gotta do.
Oh, man, that was great.
You see, everything. What?
What time is it there, Brian?
It's 3:46. Hey, you know, instead of paying me $5 a song,
yeah.
Why don't you rig that contest in Seattle and hook me up?
Oh, you want to come to the show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I'll take care of that. Just, you know, don't scare me.
You want me to hang on the line?
you can hang on the line. Well, I'll set you up when I get there. I'll put you on the guest list. We'll work it out.
Okay, cool.
Okay, thanks, Brian.
Wow. So all of that was really just to get some ducats to your show. What else? What's next?
It's go time, Riley.
I know.
You hear me? It's 3:30 in the morning there. It's 3:30 in the morning, and he's going at it. Hey, folks, we've got the dog of the week coming up. It's 47 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hi, this is Phil Lesh from the Grateful Dead. One time, I was listening to Morning Sedition and Marin started riffing on the Bush administration. Then Riley came in with a slamming groove about the right wing's use of the media. Just when you thought it couldn't get any freakier, Marin broke into Scarlet Begonias. What a sick jam. Best show ever. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. It's Mark Maron here. That's Mark Riley there.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. It is Friday. I'm feeling a little better, man. I think I'm out of the tunnel.
Brian picked you up.
Brian picked me up.
Yeah.
What? We're singing. It's go time. We got to hear that again. All right, folks. Sometimes it's hard to know what the headlines say, so thank God we got this machine, the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headliner translator. Let's feed it some headlines. All right, from the New York Times, Senate Leader Frist veers from Bush over stem cells. Senate Leader Frist veers from Bush over stem cells. Translation, Frist realizes he might still have a future in medicine. Medicine. From the Seattle Times, U.S. five nations join pact to curb climate changes. U.S. five nations join pact to curb climate changes. Translation, U.S. five nations join Coalition of the Chilling. Hey, that's what my mother would call a cute joke.
Uh-oh.
From Chicago Sun-Times, 9 out of 10 teens now using the Internet. 9 out of 10 teens now using the Internet. Translation, teen pregnancy hits new low. That was good, man. That was a clever joke. You know, you had to do a little thinking on that one, Chris. How'd that feel for you, the thinking?
It felt great.
Good,
first
man.
Time in a while.
Yeah.
Here we go. It's time now for Mark Riley's Dog of the Week.
Oh, is it that time again?
It is. It's Friday, man. Every Friday.
All right. Well, this week's dog, Mark Maron, comes to us from the Dirty South. Miami, to be exact. This dog won in a photo finish with that dolt from Pennsylvania, Senator Rick Santorum. Mm. He is Miami's Parks Director, Ernest Burkeen. His office recently sent out a press release inviting summer camp kids to a ghetto-style talent show and watermelon eating contest. That's right, a title straight out of an early 20th century minstrel show. Black community leaders were outraged at the wording for the show, which is tonight, by the way. Can you blame them? Ghetto and watermelon in the same press release, and no touch of irony whatsoever. That's because the guy who put out the release, Ernest Burkeen, is black himself. He's formally apologized and has changed the name from ghetto to funky, but Burkeen is defending his original choice of words. He says today's black youth don't use the word ghetto as their elders did, and the watermelon eating contest will go on as scheduled. Burkeen has his defenders in Miami, but come on! If you read the lines ghetto-style talent show and watermelon eating contest together, a little light bulb should go on in your head. Because it didn't, Ernest Burkeen is the Morning Sedition Dog of the Week.
Yeah, that's he deserved it, man.
I hate to slam a brother, but hey,
yeah,
wake up.
What are you going to do? That's
snap out of it.
Unbelievable. Hey, folks, it is Friday. I know some of you are wondering, hey, how come they're not in our neighborhood? Well, we'll be broadcasting live from the legendary CBGBs in Manhattan next Friday, August 6th. You can go to morningsedition.com for more info and stay tuned for further details. On the 6th of August, that's the Saturday following our CBGB show, as Brian from Everett mentioned earlier, I will be in Seattle for two shows at Giggles Comedy Club. Also, on our show today, if you're going to hang out, comedian Bill Maher is going to be on the phone for a few minutes in the last hour of our show, as will another comedian. Now, he's not a comedian, but Maria Bamford, who is one of my favorites, a very funny woman, is going to be in studio later in the show. We've got all that going on. And also, we're going to talk a little more in depth about the energy bill and just how it is a bad bill, Riley.
Yeah, it is a bad bill. It's a bill that George Bush wanted to see passed. He's going to sign it into law, and it will change very little, if anything, for the American public.
It's unbelievable to me that the final version rejected a Senate provision that required reduction of oil consumption by 1 million barrels per day by 2015. God forbid they try to tone it down a little bit.
Oh, they'll say that'll create unemployment. They got an answer for that.
So it just means that our need for imported oil is going to keep growing, and this did absolutely nothing, but it might get us a little more daylight. And I can
I'm down with.
That I can explain it. This is their big idea. It's like, well, maybe we fix the air conditioners and extend daylight savings time another month on each side of the thing.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we can trim some of the energy down that way.
They tried this once before. Hello.
I didn't turn my air on last night. You know why? Because
you
I
need it.
No, I was going to make it sound more noble than that, but that's absolutely right. We didn't need it. So stay with us here. We're going to have Bill Maher later in the show. We're going to talk about the energy bill and Bill Frist fighting the president, which is he's got no personality at all. 57 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. It's Friday, and I'm coming down from a sugar buzz already, Riley.
Already?
Well, I ate that.
Oh, that's right, I forgot.
From that WSMB in New Orleans sent us this. I don't even know what they're called. It probably has some cute French name, but it was a giant horseshoe of sugar and pralines, or pralines, however you want to say it. I'm not going to get into the argument.
Oh, wait a minute. Somebody did get into that.
I know. I don't remember who. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Legislation has been introduced in Congress to put a tax on pornography.
What?
Yeah. All those in favor of the bill, raise your free hand. A government study says echinacea does little to fight colds. The journal says that cold sufferers would be far better served by, say, boiled essence of cat's paw or the strategic application of fire ants. Advocates of echinacea were surprised by the study but said they were glad they could still rely on St. John's wort, ginseng, ginkgo, and their muddled-headed hippie faith in anything scraped off a cow turd.
Ooh.
Can I say that again? And their own muddled-headed hippie faith in anything scraped off a cow turd. Nothing. Kayla, what are you working on? All right. A student who intentionally vomited on his teacher has been sentenced to cleaning up vomit. In his defense, after he vomited on his Spanish teacher, his conjugation of the verb to hurl was perfect. Okay. Critics say that if intentional vomiting is criminalized, every one-way model in the country will be subject to arrest. Every runway model in the country will be subject to arrest. Those are your Morning Sedition Cliff Notes, version one. Let version two later, if that's okay with you. Bill Frist, Senate Majority Leader, going up against the president in terms of his cell stems. I can't talk now. The Senate Majority, Bill Frist, has decided to support a bill to expand federal financing of embryonic stem cell research. This could force a confrontation with the White House, which is threatening to veto the measure. Because, as you know, since 2001, Bush's policy has placed strict limits on taxpayer financing for the work, and Frist is going to support the bill nonetheless because he is a doctor. Not that I'm a Frist apologist, he's a doctor, but he also has an incredibly large family interest in a corporation called HCA, which is the nation's leading provider of healthcare services, for-profit organization put together by his father. His brother was the CEO, the head of it for years.
I don't know if this signals a rupture in the relationship between Bill Frist and his boy, the President of the United States. I don't know if they'll be permanently at loggerheads over this. After all, Bush did get the CAFTA thing done. They got some of that energy bill thing has gotten passed to a point. But this does represent something very interesting because Bill Frist, up until now, I think, believed that he needed George Bush for something if he's going to run for president in 08. I guess not now.
Dude, there's no way that guy's going to be president. There's just no way. He stands for nothing. He's mushy-faced. He's crappy. You know, there's a lot of reasons. I don't want to be articulate about it right now because it's Friday, but there's just no way that guy can be president.
What if it was Bill Frist against Hillary Clinton?
There's no way that guy can be president.
You think Hillary Clinton will be the first woman president if she's running against Frist?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Don't you?
I agree. I just know that there'd be a lot of people who would say that Bill Frist would stand a better than average chance against Hillary Clinton. I don't happen to subscribe to that.
I don't believe that I do either. If that's the choices, though, that upsets me. God, I hope there's a better buffet to visit. I really do.
A better buffet?
Yeah, of presidential candidates.
Oh, my goodness.
I hope that's not what we end up with.
Try the almond shrimp.
Okay, I will. Is that running for president?
That's part of the buffet.
President almond shrimp?
Yes.
Okay.
I know. I go to the buffet in my neighborhood.
You like that Chinese buffet, don't you?
Sometimes.
How often do you go?
A little greasy. About once a month.
Really?
Yeah, I don't go that often.
Not a regular gig?
No. Stinky's Barbecue is a regular gig.
Oh, yeah? I cannot go to buffets, dude. I cannot
really?
Go. It's just too much pressure for me to eat. And I can't, and I'm constantly frightened that they're going to run out of food.
Oh, no, not in this place they don't.
It doesn't matter whether they do or not. It's just this weird thing I have. I'll be sitting there eating, looking over my shoulder, going, oh, they just put out new thing. They put out new stuff.
Let me go. Yeah,
I know. It's ridiculous. And it's a racket, too, because you can't eat all of it.
No, you can't eat all of it, but you pay good money. You don't eat as much as it costs them to make it, that's for sure.
Indian buffet. That's what I'm going to do for lunch. Let's go to the Indian place. You want anybody? No. No one's on board? All right. Anyways, so look, let's talk about these contractors. There's a big conversation to be had around profiteering off 9/11 and why it happened and whether or not it was just chaos and opportunists or whether or not there was some scam. But this story that we're looking at today about an event planner named Suni L. Sims, who made basically about $5.4 million pay for 9 months of work. She was subcontracted by a subcontractor. This was a group called the Pearson Incorporated, Pearson Group. And we've talked about these guys before. They were in charge of subcontracting subcontractors to aid in the Transportation Security Administration's move towards hiring
baggage screeners. Yeah, 60,000 worth.
And so it was a big task. It happened right after 9/11. This woman gets a gig out of nowhere. She's got an events planning operation. She runs out of her apartment with some other woman.
Yeah.
And they get this huge contract, and they move hundreds of people. They give hundreds of people jobs. They make they move. How much was the big money?
They billed $24 million, this little events planning company of hers.
Now, the entire budget of the contract rose from $104 million to $741 million for the main subcontractor, Pearson, who hired this person. But
yep.
She billed $24 million. Now, why is this whole thing fishy other than she walked with $5.4 million?
All right. This is what it's not just that it's fishy. It shows you what happens when people and this happens whether government is controlled by Democrats or Republicans. There was a specific response to September 11th. There were certain actions, there were certain budget that was put out to speak to a specific issue that had to do with September 11th. They suddenly expanded that mandate, and all of these folks were able apparently to just step in and bite off little chunks of the apple as people said, you know, we got to get these people on. They wanted those 60,000 people hired, and they really didn't care how it was done. So they took a woman who, by the way, had no gig before this, no major contract before this, and no major contract since this.
She worked for the Four Seasons Hotel.
She worked for the Four Seasons Hotel, but she formed her company after she left the Four Seasons Hotel.
It sounded like she was just sort of kind of doing a little freelancing, but as soon as she got the gig, she incorporated, and she walked with $5 million, $5.4
million. $5.4
million.
That's her personal compensation. And she gave herself a $270,000 a year pension on top of this. Now, her friends say she would never knowingly take advantage of the government. She's a Christian. Now, where have we heard that before?
Okay, you're right. Let's let her off the hook.
Yeah, let's let her off the hook first. But see, it's not just her. It is a system that really is incapable of responding to an emergency without wasting money. And the thing is, the Republicans always tell us in election after election after election that they're better at doing this than Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, a $950 toilet seat the Defense Department bought back in the day. You see this kind of foolishness where people, there was no reason why your wife or my wife shouldn't have gotten the money that this woman got.
Well, apparently, according to some people, she mobilized an awful lot of people. She rented a lot of rooms. She, she pulled a lot of people in and got a lot of people put through the screening
process.
Because
she had a lot of money.
Well, yeah, but I mean, someone could have just walked with the money. In her defense, I mean, it seems like some of the people that they talked to outside of a little bit of a chaos said she did a good job. And for the area that she was living in the San Diego area, that area is fueled by tourism. The place has been dead. So she's bringing all these people into these hotels to screen them for this job. And all of a sudden, other people have jobs and now there's a little money coming into the hotels. Some people said she did a good job. But the real issue is that she couldn't account for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
It's more than that. $15 million in expenses submitted by her company could not be substantiated. They could only find supporting documents on $326,000 out of $5.8 million that the company spent directly on such services as accounting and administration.
And Pearson says that if she did take that $5.4 million for herself, that, it's unacceptable. But
Too bad.
Right. But see, this is what Republicans do and why she, this is how it works. These are opportunistic people, but the weird thing about this story when I was reading it is a lot of people think she did a pretty good job. And if you were given a job where you had the opportunity to take $5.4 million that no one was going to notice, would you?
Well, they noticed it. That's why they're auditing the woman now.
Okay, well, what do you think's going to happen with this?
She'll still get her $270,000 annual pension. She's got a $1 million house where she had a two-bedroom apartment when she started this.
You don't think that she's going to keep that $5.4 million?
Oh, no, that's hers. That's found money.
Okay, all right, there you go.
But my question is this. If we're supposed to be living in a meritocracy, How the hell does somebody with no track record get $5.4 million out of the government?
And also, and I think importantly as well, is why wasn't there more government oversight about what was happening with that money that was being, you know, moved around out of the government, you know, seemingly haphazardly, you know, in the shadow of all these people dying and in the shadow of this horrendous attack on our country and in the shadow of you know, something actually being done. Whereas ultimately, years pass now, and there's a lot of holes in the security of the airports to this day. And whether or not this really did anything, I don't know, other than, you know, it was sort of a big, what would you call it? Not a promotional activity, but it was panic.
It was panic, and it was money poorly spent. I'm starting to believe, you know that guy that does the commercials about how the government has $100,000 for you to go back to school?
Yeah.
I'm starting to believe him now, because this is what he's talking about.
But apparently they got $5.4 million for you to start your own business.
Yeah.
If you want it. We got a Dream Diary coming up. Haven't done that in a while. It is 17 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
And it's go time. Let's go. Say the warriors and terrorists too. Now this is what we live for. Because the man's got to do
it. We're singing.
We're singing.
Oh.
What a
Cause the man's got to do what a man's got to do.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was great.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Feels good to be a gangster.
22 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We just got word from our traffic and weather guy here in New York, Dale Shaw, who's from New Orleans, and says the food our affiliate, WSMB, sent us are called beignets. And I wish I'd known that, but the one that I have was called Cajun Crinkle.
Cajun crinkle beignet.
Yeah, look, dude, all I know is I ate half of it, and I'm still barely. I'm having hallucinations.
Chris, you got to keep the City Bakery stuff away from him. Today.
No.
Too much sugar, man.
This is the day.
You're gonna fly off the top of the roof of this building.
Our intern Goliath Anthony, big Anthony,
as opposed to the process server.
Yeah, as opposed to little Goliath, it was just sitting there. The beignet was talking to him, you know, because I walked in, and he's like, "Oh man, how is that still good?" Like a week later.
Yeah.
How much would you eat? Like, and the other half? Did you eat the other? You did. He ate a little bit of it.
Hey, he had a busy day.
Like, a little bit for him is like the whole thing.
Come on. Hey, he's got some subpoenas to serve in Harlem later. Let him have his food.
That's right. He's doing a real job. Yeah, the law office. Here we go. Look at this. You know, I have a dream. I haven't had a dream diary in a long time, but I've been taking that melatonin.
Uh-oh.
And screwing with my head. I'm in some kind of hospital theater, and down in front is my dead cat Butch wearing a white surgical gown and smoking a cigarette. In front of him, a terrified Carl Rove and Scooter Libby are strapped down to operating tables. Their heads are shaved and red lines have been drawn on their bald skulls.
Ooh.
Chaney and Bush are sitting in the front row. Butch blew smoke at them and says, "Today, gentlemen, we explore the brain of the liar, the traitor, and the poisonous lackey." He takes out a scalpel, cuts along the red line, and peels back Rove's skull. That's she that should be, because Butch is a girl. Butch makes a small whimpering sound. Butch points at Rove's brain and says, "Notice the enormous lying lobe. Observing these angry purple blotches, I don't think one word of truth has ever penetrated this hard membrane." Butch took out a hammer and chisel and took a few whacks at Rove's brain. "There, now it can breathe. So, Scooter, what kind of name is that for a grown man? Let's have a look at your tiny purple walnut." Then Butch cuts open Scooter Libby's brain and peels it back, just as I thought. Scooter's brain suffers from a lack of oxygen for living so long inside Chaney's soft, roomy ass.
Ooh.
Chaney just sat there. Butch lights a cigarette. "I guess you are wondering why I cut open your assistant's skulls and force you to watch. It's the same reason Carl and Scooter revealed sensitive national security secrets. Because I can." Bush and Cheney made little grunting sounds. Why, thank you. I think the surgery went very well, too. Sometimes these procedures do not work out as you planned. For instance, just this morning, Butch pulls Robert Novak's severed head out of a bag and tosses it in Bush's lap. Bush and Cheney both scream like little girls. Butch says, so you think that I have done it, what I have done is unethical? Perhaps we should have an investigation so we can all gather all the facts. I woke up and my bed was filled with bone saws.
Ooh.
That was a good one. Robert Novak's severed head. Always good. So, Kayla, what's going on, man? You went to the Mets game yesterday?
No, that would be in Houston, and that would be impossible.
I thought you did. I thought that's why you only got an hour's worth of sleep.
No, I watched the Mets game.
He watched it on TV.
And I must say, that was a big mistake.
Yeah? You stayed up all night to watch a Mets game. Why couldn't you just say you flew to Houston? Why couldn't you just say that?
That would have been cool, but no.
All right, so you know they lost. Yeah, you know what's weird about that?
What?
I don't care. And the other thing that's weird about it...
Why'd you ask?
Why'd you ask?
No, I'm just responding to hurting my feelings. But I would like to know more about baseball. I would like to... as you know, I had a bad experience in Pee Wee Little League. But why are the Mets so great right now? Why do you love them so much?
Oh, I've always loved the Mets. But right now, they're great because they have a lot of young talent.
Yeah.
And they're going to be a good team, a great team, in this year and next year and for years to come.
Now, a lot of these guys are Latino guys, right?
I guess so.
We'll just be honest with you. There's no shame in being honest.
No, I mean, you know.
Because we're going to talk to this guy, Jonathan Mollett.
Reyes and Pedro.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know. Cairo, I guess, is. I don't know.
I don't know a lot
Carlos
about
Beltran.
I was also talking about Miguel Cairo. But, yeah, Carlos Beltran as well.
See, I don't know a lot about baseball. Is there a lot of Latino guys who are just great players? I mean, how does that work? There's a lot of Dominican guys, right?
Yeah. Actually, they're really, really good.
In as all-around ball players?
Yes. Like Alfonso Soriano.
Uh-huh.
They're really talented guys.
Yeah. I watched a special on Mickey Mantle last night.
He's not Latino.
No, I know.
Oh, okay.
I know, but he was a great all-around baseball player.
Yeah, he was from Oklahoma.
Yeah, but I watched the special. I'm just saying that, like, I don't like baseball, but I found it very heartwarming.
What did you find so heartwarming about it?
After he got his liver rotted out, mm-hmm. and he had alcoholism and everything else, that he told kids not to live like him. I find that impressive when a sports hero, can say, I screwed up and don't live like me because I'm a disaster.
Lyle Alzado did the same thing.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, when we come back, Jonathan Mahler, whose upcoming article on the New York Mets and the emerging presence of Latin American baseball players appears in this Sunday's New York Times, is going to be with us to talk about the Mets. I'm sorry, Kayla. I'm sort of a douchebag.
What are you talking about? Let's go Mets, baby.
All right, yay, go Mets. All right, yay.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Reilly on Air America Radio.
That's great. 34 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly.
Hi.
On Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. Got Brendan P.W. McDonald in the studio, smiling and dancing
This makes my day better. That's all.
A promo with a banjo
Kalo
in
too.
It.
Too. Look at him. Look at his smile on his face.
Rocking back and forth. I had to bring a couple of baseball fans in here to watch my back during this interview here because I want to get the most out of this interview because I don't have a background in baseball, and you love baseball, Brendon.
And Kalo. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we know Kalo does. I'm an American.
But Riley, you really love wearing soccer, though. That's your...
I do love soccer.
You've got an Arsenal shirt on now. All right, a quarter of all Major League Baseball players are now Latin American, and that number is almost certain to grow since nearly half of all minor leaguers are Latino. This year in baseball's All-Star Game, a record of 24 of the 60 players selected were Latin American. The general manager of the New York Mets, Omar Minaya, is the first Latin American GM of a Major League team in the U.S. Our next guest has the cover story in this Sunday's New York Times Magazine about the emerging presence of Latin Americans in Major League Baseball and the way Omar Minaya and the Mets are trying to capitalize on that trend. He's also the author of Ladies and Gentlemen, The Bronx is Burning, 1977, Baseball, Politics, and the Battle for the Soul of a City. Jonathan Mahler joins us on the phone this morning from Brooklyn. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So tell me about what are Omar Minaya and the Mets doing that other teams just really aren't doing yet?
Well, they are really sort of self-consciously building an international and really specifically a Latin and even more specifically a pretty heavily Dominican team, which involves pouring a lot of resources into both kind of scouting and player development in Latin America as well as marketing and advertising to the Latin community in New York to sort of bring them out to Shaq.
It's very interesting the dynamics you talk about in your piece about scouts going to Latin America and dealing with sort of, you know, local scouts. It's sort of a bit of a shady business.
It's a very shady business. There are Major League Baseball prohibits teams from signing players until they're about to turn 17, but the agents down in the Dominican and other Latin American countries are totally unregulated. So, for instance, I write about a kid in this story who the Mets just signed who just turned 17, but who actually was discovered by an agent down in the Dominican when he was 10 years old, playing shortstop with a milk carton.
Oh, my God. So they're just keeping their eye on these kids and training them like animals.
They are, and then they take a rather large percentage of their signing bonuses.
Right.
Jonathan Mahler, how has Omar Minaya's presence with the Mets changed the experience that Latino fans have when they go to Shea Stadium?
Yeah, well, the main thing really is Pedro. I mean, the most visible sign is Pedro Martinez. You know, you go out to the ballpark now when Pedro's pitching, and, you know, you see fans waving Dominican flags. So, you know, the Mets have historically been a pretty white team, which makes a lot of sense given that they started in Queens in the early 60s, mid-60s, when it was still predominantly a white borough, and they got a lot of their fans obviously from Queens, but also from Long Island, which... from, you know, the suburbs of Long Island, which were also white. So you know, the fan base, as I said, has sort of historically been white, and with the arrival of Omar and the signings of Pedro Martinez, Carlos Beltran, even Miguel Cairo, Roberto Hernandez, all these guys who joined the Mets in the offseason, the team has become much more appealing and exciting team to New York, to Latinos in New York.
Well, if I could add something personal to that,
sure.
Guys, myself and Chris here, we go to a lot of the games, and the days when Pedro is starting, the attendance seems to rise. I think you actually put a figure 5, on it, Jonathan, 5,000 people or
On average.
Now that they're calling that the Pedro effect, but yeah. Isn't that now also having an effect, and that's the intended effect that Minaya wants it to have in countries like the Dominican Republic?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's raising the Mets' profile in the Dominican Republic. And, you know, I was down there for one of Pedro's starts, and I went around to various different bars in the city with another sports journalist down there. And, you know, people were crowded around their TV sets to watch Pedro pitch. So what Omar hopes is that sort of on the back end what will happen is young prospects down in the Dominican who might never have thought about the Mets or who might have known about the Yankees and the Red Sox, teams with historically larger Dominican presences on their teams, might now think, hey, I want to sign with the Mets. And in fact, just recently the Mets signed really the most coveted offensive player in the Dominican Republic, a 16-year-old kid, who they just signed for $1.4 million. And his agent told Minaya that he was especially interested in the Mets because of Pedro.
Well, that's really interesting because you said in the piece that it's more important almost for immigrant communities to have a loyalty to the nationality rather than the team. I think you talked about how in Washington Heights during the playoffs, more people in bars there are cheering for the Red Sox because they have Manny Ramirez.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's a the community of Washington, the neighborhood of Washington Heights, which is really literally just across the Harlem River from Yankee Stadium. I mean, it couldn't be any closer to Yankee Stadium. You go up there, you go into bars, and you're just as likely to see Red Sox jerseys with Manny Ramirez's name on the back. And, you know, even last year when Pedro was pitching for the Red Sox, if you go to Yankee Stadium to see him start, you see a big crowd of Pedro fans.
So if this is relative to Queens, I live in Queens right now. Are we going to be start seeing a few more Greek and Egyptian players on the Mets? And...
You know, if they're out there, Omar will find them.
A Ukrainian player, too. I think we can really open this wide open.
Yeah. You know, Jonathan, it strikes me that there is some past history to this sort of thing. For example, you know, Italians gravitated toward Joe DiMaggio. Yeah. Certainly, blacks were Dodger fans for a generation after right. Branch Rickey signed Jackie Robinson.
Yep.
Is Omar Minaya in that same general vein, or is he different?
I think, I mean, he's in the same category for sure. But what seems to me to be different about him is that he's really doing this very self-consciously. I mean, I think that teams like the Dodgers and the Giants are a very good example. The Giants were really the most aggressive team down in the Dominican early on. The Pirates too were very aggressive in Latin America in those early years, but you know they were just looking to exploit talent. They were looking for players, which you know not too dissimilar from what Billy Beane and the
song Moneyball.
Yeah, they're just looking to get an edge on the competition. I think Omar's doing that, but Omar's also doing this from a marketing standpoint. He's also realizing that. His team plays in a city that's filled with Hispanics and in fact is becoming more and more Hispanic every year, and he can make that team more appealing to his city, make that team reflect his city better by really sort of self-consciously going out and building a more Latin team. So I think it goes beyond just getting the best players he can at the lowest price. And it's actually kind of a marketing idea as well.
Is he trying to hit like quotas here on Latin players?
Not quotas, but I think, you know, he wants the team to look like New York is basically how he puts it.
Hmm.
He wants the team to look and feel like New York. And so I don't think he's looking to have X number of Latin players on the field at any given moment, but I think he wants the team to be like the gorgeous mosaic of David Dinkins' fame.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan Mahler, is this a function at all of the fact that, this is a two-team town and the Mets have, in many instances and in many years past, played second fiddle to the Yankees? Does that play a role at all in the kind of marketing that Omar Minaya is doing to the Latino community?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, I think that in the past, the Mets have sort of given the Latino community to the Yankees. I mean, I think they just have sort of written it off. The Yankees have really had quite a few Latin players for years now, and I think Omar wants to change that, and he wants to create some excitement around the team. He wants to give people a reason to go out and see the Mets, and you know, which as you know, even non-baseball fans know, over the past few years has not been there.
Oh yeah,
they've just stunk, and. You know,
yeah, rub it in, Jonathan.
Thanks.
I think, but that's changing this year. I mean, they're an exciting team, and I think another thing about the kind of the Latin style of play is it's more aggressive and more emotional, and it's exciting. So I think that, you know, Omar knows that if he can, bring that kind of play to the Mets, people will want to go see him, and mm-hmm. It's working, you know.
Now, Jonathan, Ozzie Guillen once said that American ball players just learn how to hit home runs, whereas Latino players learn how to play baseball. Does right. Omar believe in that?
No, I don't. I mean, I think that first of all, I think that that was more true in a different era in a way, because I think now you have all these power hitters now coming out of Latin America. I mean, you know, Albert Pujols is a good example. But David Ortiz, Carlos Delgado. But I think there's no question that and I saw this myself when I was down there. You know, you get incredible infielders down there because the fields are so terrible.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, Jonathan.
It's incredible. I mean, I really, the other thing that was so surprising to me, I mean, I spent several days down there, and, you sort of would assume that given all the attention that Latin players have been getting in recent years, you would think that things would be sort of more sophisticated. The whole structure and system would be more scouting system would be more sophisticated down there. It was incredibly primitive.
But there's no real culture of baseball down there in terms of teams and in terms of stadiums and that kind of stuff.
Not really. I mean, there are old rickety stadiums with terrible infields and cows grazing in the outfield. I mean, literally, I'm not being hyperbolic. And there are certainly leagues, little leagues, and things like that. But they don't play with anywhere near the frequency that teams play in the States, in part because they don't have any money to pay umpires and buy equipment.
Is there any indication that some of this stuff is going to be moving in that direction because of the connection with the Mets?
I would think that it has to, and I think that what you're already seeing is a dramatic increase in the size of signing bonuses. I mean, for instance, Jose Reyes, who's now the leadoff hitter and starting shortstop for the Mets, you know, just in I think it was 1999, he signed for $15,000. You know, and he's a star.
Well, and that's necessary because I mean, what they were giving is signing bonuses, weren't they? Giving like, you know, refrigerators for Sammy Sosa's parents.
Yeah, exactly. They gave Sammy Sosa $3,500 plus $500 for his family to buy a refrigerator. But you know. But that was entirely, it was a generator, but it was entirely self-serving to make sure that he was well-fed.
Right. All right, but Jonathan, you spent the time down in the DR. You spent time with Omar Minaya. There's two Mets, huge Mets fans in the room here. Is this strategy going to work because we want a championship?
We need one.
Wow, you'll settle for nothing less than a championship.
I know we're jumping the gun here, aren't we?
How about a $2 hot dog?
I think you're going to finish over 500 this year. I'll go out on a limb and predict that. No, I think that long term this is going to work. I mean, you know, it's so difficult. It's such an incredibly competitive market, and Omar's going down a very different path than a lot of teams are. Teams like. With proven records of success like the Oakland A's, so I mean it's you know who knows whether it's going to make the team a championship team. I think there's no question that it is working and will continue to work in as much as it's going to draw more fans to Shea and the team's going to be competitive and
right.
exciting.
Right.
I don't know whether ultimately they're going to be a championship team, but you can already see the seeds of a big future there.
All right, Jonathan Maurer, the article, if you want to read it, is in this week's New York Times Magazine. His book is Ladies and Gentlemen, The Bronx is Burning, 1977 Baseball Politics and the Battle for the Soul of a City. It was great talking to you. Thanks for educating us this morning.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks,
Jonathan. For having me.
Okay, you bet. When we come back here in just a couple of minutes, Ann Coulter finally, you know, coming around and telling the truth and supporting something we've been saying here for a while. It's 47 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning City.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Two past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program, Friday morning. I'm going to do a little comedy this weekend, I think, Riley. Maybe I'll play
I'm
some
doing
baseball.
A little politics this week.
Oh, where are you going to be?
Tonight, I'm going to be on the road to City Hall at New York One here in New York City.
Oh, great, man. So watch that. I'll be at the Improv tonight and tomorrow. I don't publicize it much. I'm just, you know, but if you want to come down, come on down.
Hey,
yeah, what?
I'm sorry to bother you, but...
You never bother me, Chris. I just want to tell you that. You never bother me. I love you no matter what happens here on the air. I love you, man.
All right, well, that guy from yesterday that threatened you, he's on the phone. Do you want me to just hang up on him?
No. All right, you know what? Just put them on. Just put them on. All right, caller, so what's it going to be today? What is it? What?
That's good, Mark. You're asking me how it's going to go.
This guy's creepy, man.
That's how it is, Mark. I'm in control here.
All right, so if you're in control, why are you calling my show 2 days in a row?
You must feel really safe there in your nice, safe little studio. Nothing ever happens to Mark, right? Until now.
Well, what exactly is happening now? Could you give me a such as an example here?
Oh, a lot of bad things can happen to you. Don't you see? I'm a bad man with a bad plan.
Oh yeah. You're a bad man, huh?
Yes, Mark. And I want to surprise you. Do you like surprises?
Well, look, I'm thinking about calling the cops, man. I mean, I want you. You should know that. All right.
That would solve everything for you, wouldn't it?
Yeah, a little bit.
Wrap it all up in a nice little bow. Mark wins and I lose. Well, not this time. Here's the secret.
Ugh.
I don't like you, Mark.
Yeah, well, I don't like you either, man.
See, we have so much in common. For instance, I'll be at the Improv tonight.
What? Now, wait. Well, that's creepy. So I guess I'm going to meet this guy. So now I got to worry about that? You know, on top of, like, just putting on a damn show, I got to worry about some freak that calls me on the...
You know, I guess this stuff happens in radio, right, Riley?
Yeah, it does.
All right, well, this week the Senate voted to change the presidential line of succession, which dictates the order in which officials take over the presidency. But, you know, before we do that, I want to hear this thing. This blew me away. Ann Coulter, okay, Ann Coulter on Sean Hannity's radio show with Brent Bozell, who is another douchebag, all right, with Brent Bozell, you know, actually said something that was the most honest thing that she said in a long time, and they didn't know what to do with it. Can we hear that, Chris?
They're not going to fight for Clarence Thomas the way they did in 1991. It's a shameful situation, but there you have it.
I think they would. I think it's a better Senate than it was then, and we have the media now.
And we have the media now. Look at that. The right wing finally admits that they're lying about the liberal media. This has always been my contention. I've said this on the show. It's not hard to figure out. There is no liberal media. There is irresponsible media, and there is right wing media, and that's it. And she let it slip out. I don't think it was a mistake on her part. I think that's just the way she is. But it was interesting to actually see her say something true and honest once.
Yeah, once.
Yeah. All right, so now let's talk about this succession thing. I told you that the Senate voted to change the presidential line of succession, which dictates an order in which officials take over the presidency in case a president and the people below him become unable to serve. The Senate moved the Secretary of Homeland Security up from last place to eighth place just after the Attorney General. Doesn't it sound like a contract point? Doesn't it sound like Chertoff was like, yeah, not unless I get that deal on the moving up the line of succession. I want my title to be higher.
Yeah.
In the process, the Homeland Security Secretary leapfrogged some pretty obscure, low-level cabinet positions that you've probably never heard of. I bet you, I'm going to quiz you, Riley. You ever heard of the Secretary of Administrative Assistance?
Secretary of no.
Yeah, see? How about the Secretary of Secretaries, who, because of glass ceilings, will never rise above secretary?
I hadn't heard of that before.
How about the Secretary of Redefining and Downgrading Names of Wars? You ever heard of that?
No, never heard of that.
How about the I Can't Believe I'm Secretary? Anything? How about the secretary? People always put the secretary on their list of sexist movies.
Hey. Is there a secretary of resilience? Because they have one in Britain. I'm thinking there should be
the
one
resilient
here.
Resilient secretary. How about the undersecretary of overlooking things?
I've heard of that. Yeah. I've heard of that job. I think Ed Meese had it in the Reagan administration.
Like Riley played this so straight. It's beautiful. How about this one, Riley? The Secretary of the Misplacement and or Destruction of Government Files. That's a very important job.
That was Rosemary Wood started
exactly,
that job.
Exactly. How about the Secretary of White House Press Releases disguised as actual news?
Jeff Gannon's job?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. How about the Secretary of Obscure Bureaucracies created during the New Deal that haven't been killed off yet?
Oh, wow.
Like the Department of Moonshine. Do you know that? How about the Secretary of NASCAR? Huh?
Oh, is there a Secretary? Danica Patrick?
Yeah, of course. Ah. See, you're pretty good, Riley. You're pretty good.
Hey, I'm trying. I'm trying.
Naming the secretary. So, what do we? Oh, in the last hour, we got big comedy. We got Bill Maher, who's going to be on the phone with us. I haven't talked to him in a while. I did his show, Politically Incorrect, a couple of times back when it was on Comedy Central.
Uh-oh.
But I've seen him around. Maybe he'll know who I am.
Why are you rubbing your stomach when you're promoing Bill Maher?
I'm not rubbing my stomach. It's a compulsive feeling that I'm trying to feel my muscles.
You're trying to think whether you're thinner than Bill Maher?
No. I'm Riley, I ate an entire beignet.
I ate an entire beignet,
and I'm just trying to hide the shame because I know we got more baked goods coming.
Oh, so that's right.
That's coming up. We're going to be eating baked goods and Bill Maher. 57 past the hour, you're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Blah, blah, blah.
6 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yes, I am.
It's Friday morning, folks. Our next guest has a new who. Yes, he's going to be here in just a second, my friend.
Yeah.
So, Riley, Maria Bamford's going to be here in about 20 minutes. She's very funny. She's one of the... There's, you know, my wife's a very funny woman, and there's a few very funny women, and Maria Bamford is truly one of the great women comedians. She's on the big tour, the Comedians of Comedy Tour, with Brian Posehn, Patton Oswalt, Zach Galifianakis. They're going to be at Irving Plaza tonight.
Uh-oh.
I might go to the party afterwards. I got a little invite to a party.
Wait a minute. You're not going to go to a performance. You're going to go to the after party.
I know. Well, I got my own comedy to do in the basement up on 53rd Street. Do you know what I mean?
Well, where's your
after
party?
Yeah, right. Yeah, you want the sad after party of my improv
Come
show?
Come on, man. Some buffalo wings.
Oh, man. So, dude, I am going to be at the Improv, and I haven't been plugging these shows a lot, because I find that sometimes when people listen to our show and I tell them I'm going to do comedy, they're thinking, like, it's going to be all me, I'm going to be headlining. And the way it works in New York City is they have the showcase clubs where mm-hmm. you got four or five comics on the show. Everyone does equal amount of time. And sometimes I wonder about the audience, about our radio audience who likes to come out. It's one of those things where it's sort of like, you know, I'd like you to come see me, but this club's a little dirty, or it's a little this. Like, I don't feel for some reason that they're going to enjoy going to the club where I'm playing.
And you know what it is? You think that our audience that's listening to us, when they go see you perform comedy live, they think that you're like liberal man, and
yeah.
that you have to kind of uphold each and every value that we talk about on the radio.
Well, they want some of the relief they get from listening to us talk about issues in depth, and you know, sometimes I just want to be a clown. Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about this energy bill. The energy bill, which a 1,700-page energy bill, contains tax credits worth nearly $14.6 billion to oil, natural gas, electricity, and renewable energy companies. The House vote was 275 to 156 to pass it. The bill does not include any provisions on opening ANWR to oil drilling, which is good.
Yeah.
House Republicans will pursue that separately. It wasn't like a concession out of the goodness of their heart. It's very interesting how this bill is just so heinous. In terms of global warming, the final version contains no substantive provisions to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions that are causing global warming, such as carbon tax or a cap. The conference has even stripped out a Senate provision acknowledging the threat of climate change. As the world moves forward to deal with the problem, America continues to fall behind. The bill just says we need some, to study it a little more. Further studies and research, whatever the hell that means.
This is Bush trying to say to Americans, on the one hand, he's taking care of his oil interests, the natural gas people, those folks that contributed so much money to his two elections. And on the other hand, he throws in a little thing about, you know, maybe having a bit of a premium or some kind of a break if you get a fuel-efficient car and that sort of thing, and trying to make it seem as if this veneer of consumer concern is masking, as you point out, a wholesale giveaway to his friends and to his interests.
Well, that's the horrendous thing about this. Apparently, the Congress, you know, weren't particularly concerned about how they spent our money because they showered the electricity, coal, nuclear, natural gas, and oil industries with $8.5 billion in tax breaks and billions more in loan guarantees and other subsidies. And this is not an industry that's hurting for money, Riley.
No, it's not. And I don't know why they would need a loan guarantee. Loan guarantees are generally called corporate welfare in some quarters of this country.
It seems like a racket to me. It just seems like, I just don't understand why we can't put together some sort of progressive energy bill that would make, propel us towards other sources of energy, propel us to cleaning up the environment a little bit, and as opposed to, you know, make it worse and rationalize everything.
Well, what we have here, Mark, is a classic example of people on the one hand saying, well, if you put all of these kinds of environmental concerns into place, you're going to end up costing Americans jobs. And they know that jobs is a hot button issue. They know that no American at this point is going to favor something that's going to put people out of work. Now, this is not a proven fact. This is a theory. They don't know that putting in these environmental regulations is going to increase unemployment, but they love to scare people with that particular mantra.
Here's another thing this is a little irritating, that they're a little irritating to say the least, because I freak out over this stuff, that another cow has mad cow disease, or is being tested for mad cow disease. I don't even have any sort of clear indication of where this cow is coming from. They're not releasing the name of the farm. They're not quarantining the cow. And it's so convoluted, because the last case, which really bothered me, they got everything mixed up. You know, there was tissues mixed with other tissues. There was remains mixed with other remains. They don't know, this one they know, this cow they know did not get into the food source, which is good. It died during birth, giving birth,
yeah,
which is, you know, but it didn't have the symptoms. But the thing that creeps me out about the agriculture of the USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, and about the veterinarian who works for the Department of Agriculture, is essentially that everything seems shady, Riley. This cow has been dead for a while. The brain was cut out by a local veterinarian, frozen in a freezer. All right, the guy forgot to send the tissue to the USDA to be tested. Some tests are coming out conclusive. Some tests are not coming out conclusive. Testing options are limited for this animal infected because the brain sample was preserved with formalin, all right, which is against the law now to preserve that way. It needs to be fresh. It's just everything is convoluted, and it always feels like a cover-up to me. I'm really afraid that our meat supply, on some level, cannot help but be contaminated with this.
You know what? You called this an hour ago, or actually more than that, when we talked about this earlier.
Yeah.
Because there's one central element that's missing from this story. All of the kind of commingling of stuff, you know, put all of that to the side for a second. Why is it that nowhere in this story does it say where this cow was?
Yeah,
it's an incredible thing. The tenets of journalism: who, what, where, why, and now nothing about where this cow was.
It's bothersome. Our next guest has a new HBO comedy special called I'm Swiss, premiering tomorrow night on HBO. His forthcoming book is entitled New Rules: Polite Musings from a Timid Observer. He's also the host of HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, which returns on August 19th, and he joins us now on the phone from Los Angeles. Good morning, Bill. It's Mark Maron. How are you?
Good morning,
Bill.
It's my friend Mark Riley with us. I haven't talked to you in a long time, man. Everything good?
But you've been doing good over there. I think that's a real smooth operation that they got going. I'm so glad that turned out to be a success.
Well, thanks a lot, Bill. I appreciate it. Are you keeping abreast of this Karl Rove thing? You think they're going to take this guy down?
I am keeping very abreast.
Ah.
yes, I am. And, it's a situation of a guy who really should be in jail. I am somebody who has been called a traitor by people in high places in government before, never with any good reason. But for a country that has grown accustomed to throwing around that term, well, this is actually treasonous.
Yeah, exactly.
Actual treason, not Ann Coulter treason. This is real treason when you out a spy, and there is just no doubt in my mind that he played that card. I'm not saying that he was really trying to do that. What he was trying to do was quash a story.
Right.
You know, he was, I mean, he's Bush's main guy. Scooter Libby is Cheney's main guy. These are the two people who were calling reporters because they were afraid that Joe Wilson's article appearing in the New York Times was going to cause a media stampede to this story. And they wanted to tell reporters, look, this is not a big story. For God's sakes, the guy was sent there by his wife, you know, the CIA. Oh, yeah. Whoops, what I said.
Yeah. How satisfying would it be to see some of these guys crumble publicly?
Nothing would be more satisfying because they've certainly been an arrogant bunch.
Yeah.
I would like to see them cut down, yes.
No, Mar, you, I think, are in a unique position to comment on the cost to someone in your business for speaking your mind the way you do. What has that meant to you personally?
Well, actually, I think it's been a good thing, even though it's caused me some lumps along the way. I think what I found out when I got thrown off of ABC is that there is free speech in this country. You just have to fight for it, and that's fair. Everything good, I think we have to fight for.
And this is Ari Fleischer's a guy that told on you in some respects, and this guy might go down with the rest of them. That would be great on a personal level, wouldn't
it? Ari Fleischer is the one who said, in response to a question about me, Americans need to watch what they say, which is a very Stalinistic sounding
sure does
sentence. And I always defended Ari when people wanted to get me because, you know, I was basically being crucified for saying something off the cuff that probably could have been phrased in a more delicate way. And that's exactly what Ari Fleischer did. You know, I don't really think that Ari Fleischer wants to turn America into a Stalinist show trial, but it came out that way. And if I can see it in what he did, he should have been able to see it in what I did.
So the special tonight on HBO, I'm Swiss. I'm assuming that it's tomorrow night. What do you find? What's the most embarrassing thing to you right now about being an American?
Well, that's it. That's what people say to me. What does that mean, I'm Swiss? I say, you know, I don't hate America like the right wing likes to accuse me of. They say, Bill, you hate America first. No, I don't hate America first. There's my coffee.
Yeah.
I commit a few abortions. I burn the flag. And then I start down. I don't hate America. I love America. But, yes, I am embarrassed by it sometimes because it's been taken over by such church-simple cretins.
Yeah. Church simple cretins.
I liked it.
From, I mean, the one that really blew my mind was the Janet Jackson episode.
Right.
When America was permanently traumatized by the sight of a blurry black nipple for 1 second. That's the kind of thing where you just for like a week you're saying, I'm Swiss. I'm sorry, I can't. This when the president says that he's not sure about evolution. When our leader, you know, that kind of stuff makes me go, I'm sorry, I'm Swiss.
Yeah,
he says he thinks when he believes the Bible literally. I mean, stuff like that is just embarrassing. And it's not that we don't love America. It's that we want it back.
Yeah, we're afraid they're going to make the roads dirt again.
You're right. Yes, that's next. Right.
So we just played a soundbite of your friend Ann Coulter, who finally admitted that the media is right wing. Did you hear that? Yeah, she did. She was on it was on Sean Hannity's show. She was talking to Brent Bozell, and she said, here, we can play it real quick, Chris. Listen to this, Bill.
They're not going to fight for Clarence Thomas the way they did in 1991. It's a shameful situation, but there you have it.
I think they would. I think it's a better Senate than it was then, and we have the media now.
She admits it finally that the myth is over. It's not a liberal media. It's the right-wing media and the irresponsible media.
Are there any sightings of snowballs in hell?
So, Bill, now are you going to be touring now, or what's going on?
No, I think the tour is over because now our new season of Real Time starts.
Oh, if you need me to come on the show, let me know.
You would be a very good guest. The problem we have is that we have too many liberals and not enough conservatives to argue with.
All right, but. I'd love to see you, man. I'm going to be out in L.A. in a few weeks.
Let me know.
I will. And good luck with the special. That airs tomorrow night. It's a HBO special. I'm Swiss. It's great talking to you, Bill.
Thanks Bill.
Mark. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take it easy. Okay. Thank you. That was great. That was Bill Maher. It was nice talking to him. What else can we say there, Riley?
You may have a guest spot coming up.
I've tried that before. It's always awkward to do it in front of your entire listening audience. But I'd like to do the show, but that's exactly what they said, is they have plenty of liberals.
Uh-oh. Yeah, but they don't have Mark Maron liberal.
All right, we'll work on it. I'll go polish my stuff up at the improv tonight.
While
our next guest, who's going to be here in a minute, is going to be at Irving Plaza. But I'm not bitter. Maria Bamford will be here. Very funny. It's 19 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Thanks for joining us. Hey, let's take, should we take this call here? We got Maria Bamford coming in a few minutes, but let's take this call from Ted from Nebraska.
Hi, Mark and Mark. Once again, you're misquoting Ann Coulter. You guys are wrong about her all the time.
Oh, no, it's happening. Oh, no, I hate when this... Help me, Riley. Oh, my God. Oh, no, it's happening. My thoughts are starting to change. I'm becoming him. Oh, no.
Now, Pennsylvania.
And now, live from Radio Halliburton, it's Right and Early, the conservatives' way to wake up with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good morning, neocon! The shark needs chum! Hey, let's open the phone lines, dive into the tank, and I'll tell you why you're wrong, loser! Yeah, caller, this is Right and Early. What do you want?
Well, I'm a lifelong Democrat. I mean, Oh, come on, that's so juvenile.
Loser! Can it be more obvious? The Democrats have no ideas! Next victim, you're on the air.
Hey, Mark the Shark. Big fan. Major Sharkhead here. Yeah!
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 Hey, buddy, you got a question?
Yeah, man. the space shuttle rocks. USA, number one.
Good question, man. Good question. Only we need about hundreds of shuttles. We're going to need thousands of shuttles. With CAFTA, we'll make Mexican slaves build those bad boys. Then we'll make them build gated communities for us on the moon, and we'll live there. There'll be nobody left back on Earth but terrorists and Democrats. Yeah. Then we incinerate the whole damn place with a giant laser beam. Death, death, death,
I'm
death,
George W.
death.
Bush, and I approve this message.
Hey, this is Mark the Shark. You're on the air, caller.
This is Mark the Shark, and you're on the air, caller.
Hey, nobody does that. That's my bit. That's my bit.
Hey, nobody does that. That's my bit. That's my bit.
Hey, hey, stop saying what I say.
Stop saying what I say.
Oh, you're going to hear from my lawyer, scumbag.
You're going to hear from my lawyer, scumbag.
I'm going to stop this thing. I'm a Democrat, and I'm a loser.
I'm going to stop this thing. I'm a Democrat, and I'm a... You cheated!
Now
you
marked
the shark!
Game, set, match! The shark wins again! Stick around, Neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith.
Don't touch that dial, Patriot! We'll be back with Right and Early!
Oh, man. Wait, did you hit me in the head?
No, man, that wasn't me.
Somebody hit me in the head. What kind of crap
don't
is this?
Don't look at Brendan. He
I
didn't
passed
do it.
Out. I don't know what the hell happened.
Chris,
oh, man, I tell you something, man. I hate when those blackouts happen. What happened to my mic? Am I still on?
You're on. Yes, you
are.
Oh,
it's my headphones. That was weird. It's weird because you live in your
head. I know. Transients.
All right, my friend Maria Bamford's going to be here. She's going to be appearing tonight at Irving Plaza as part of the Comedians of Comedy Tour, and she's very funny. So please hang out for that. It's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Air America's Morning Sedition program with me, Mark Maron, and that's Mark Riley there.
You.
Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I've got I'm a big fan of our guests. I rarely get that.
It's true. He didn't even say that about Bill Maher. I'm asking.
She was voted by Comedy Central viewers as one of their top 10 favorite comics. Aww. Please welcome Maria Bamford to the show. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on the program. I'm very honored. I hope I have something intelligent to say at
don't
this
feel
early
pressure.
Hour. I'd like to say something about politics, but I can't.
I do characters.
That's what I do. I speak through other people because my own voice it doesn't command the respect and the attention that I believe I deserve. So I have to. Say it through other people.
I love your characters, and I love the fact that you told us on the break that you decided to get rid of television out of your life.
Yeah. I got rid of the TV because I couldn't stop watching it. It's so wonderful. Everything's so good. You know? The TLC, I mean, is there going to decorate somebody's house again?
You feel like you're doing something when you watch it.
I feel like I'm accomplishing things, and I know what's going to happen. The bathroom's going to look great. They're going to put the wall covering in the bathroom. It's going to feel familiar because it's their baby's skin.
I just respect anybody who has to throw something away because they don't have the self-control to not watch it.
That is totally the truth. Yeah.
Because I've had to do
so
that in my
sad.
Life. So you are performing at the Irving Plaza tonight with Patton Oswalt, Brian Posehn, Zach Galifianakis. It's the big Comedians of Comedy Tour.
Right.
I, of course, will be in the basement at the Improv Uptown, but that's a different issue. But
that's because you're a heavy hitter, buddy.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to draw like a big seven people. So, look, what I wanted the things I love that you do are these, when you used to have jobs.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, wow.
When you used to have a job. that boss of yours?
I used to work for a giant corporation because I was a part of the problem. And they... The corporation doesn't act like they care about you, because I work for a telephone company during September 11th, and then, so afterwards, because we work really hard, they did an employee recognition event because they cared about us and they loved us, and they wanted us to have extra sandwiches and get a weekend off in Palm Springs. Ooh. And they did a little speech at the end though. They said, "You guys, just big round of applause, everybody. Everyone went to any lengths to help our customers in the Manhattan area. And this year, now let's just brainstorm here. This year, the challenge is, how do we recreate that grief-stricken, terror-driven productivity and channel it into our day-to-day operations?" Okay, I'm thinking, kidnap my kids and then, I don't know, I'm just spitballing. Feel free to piggyback on any of my ideas.
Oh, God, you kill me. What about the, can you do the New Agey lady?
Oh, New Agey lady? Oh, yeah. I have a lot of anxieties, because all the news is just so terrible. It's hard to, Jesus.
Well, now you don't have a TV, so it's going
to
be less.
Well, it's less, but now I listen to, public radio, you guys, and the NPR, and it's just constantly just horrible news. I mean, I mean,
doesn't say much for us, does it?
No, but it's good. I mean, it's important news.
It's just horrible when you turn the radio on, people going, "Oh God, no!"
You're just like terrified, you know. So, I've been seeing a therapist. Therapist. Mm-hmm. I can't say it properly because I don't take it seriously. And she told me, "How about you sing your anxieties aloud? Let's call your anxieties. Let's call those gremlins." How about we just call them anxieties? Okay, how about goblins? So I'm getting a lot of help from that. So she made a song for me, and it goes like this. "If I keep my ice cube trays filled, I'll be okay. As long as I clench my fists at odd intervals, then the darkness that's within me won't force me to do things I don't want to do that are inappropriately violent. As long as I keep singing this song, I won't turn gay. And God can't kill me. It can't get you if you're singing a song."
Yay. Very nice.
Thank you very much.
Can we put that on a disc there, Chris?
Yeah.
Those are words to live by.
Yeah. It is comforting.
Do you have a CD? I think we have the same guy that does our CDs.
Dan Schlissel.
He shot me an email. He was sort of like, "Oh, I don't want to be stupid, but you and Maria are both on the label. Okay, sorry."
Oh, yeah, that's he's people. Super nice.
I know. He's been working on a CD of mine for a year.
He's really busy, man. He's got a lot of projects going on. And
you're
then...
tough to EQ, man.
Yeah, he's got a lot of plates in the air. No, we're doing the cover art. Now, everything. The great thing about this guy is he's going to a lot of what do you call it? A lot of he's putting a lot of energy into making this thing perfect. This thing's going to be great. And I don't have the heart to tell him that. I really don't sell much. Where can they get yours if they want it?
Well, they can get it at Irving Plaza this evening, but they can also get it at standuprecords.com or Amazon, that kind of thing. I sell them off my site, but only when I'm in town. And I'm a poor, I work for myself from home, and it's sort of a bit of a sweatshop environment. So I can't really get things out in a convenient or timely manner. I'm really disappointed with the general job performance of my primary employee, which is me.
I think you're doing a great job. I'm going to be like, it's so weird. I'm so glad that you actually are willing to entertain me, because sometimes I have comedians in here. Like Todd Berry's great with, Todd?
I love
Todd too, and we have him on the show a lot. But I'll try to coy him into a bit, and he'll be like, "Oh, buddy.
Yeah.
Hey, buddy, you're not trying to lead me into one of my own bits, are you, buddy?"
No.
Isn't there like some other sort of like strange gung-ho character that you do?
Oh, let me see.
Is it a neighbor or a sister or an aunt?
Let me see. Well, I do something where I say, okay. Yeah, I'm not well spoken. That's the problem. I have to do characters in order to speak well.
Do you do your mom?
I do. My mom said to me recently, "Honey, when you don't wear makeup, you look mentally ill." So now when I go home, I'm starting to wear thick green eyeshadow and a line of lipstick around my lips.
Uh-oh.
Baby, look pretty now, mommy. Baby, look pretty now.
Dude, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Duluth, Minnesota, and it's just a beautiful time. I took my boyfriend there. I'm like, do you think it's boring? He's like, yes, it is boring. We have an ore boat. That's about what's going on there.
An ore boat?
Yeah, you can tour it. You can tour it.
What do you mean?
It's an ore boat.
Oh, you mean
it's
the
docked.
Oh, so you like with
oars? No.
A boat full of iron ore.
For iron ore, dude.
Yeah. See?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm a retarded.
No,
I mean mentally challenged, of course. That's America. Why do you have an ore boat?
We're an international port because people come in from Hudson Bay all the way through the St. Lawrence Seaway and then finally to Duluth, where Jessica Lange lives with her horse farm. not many people come there, so now we just have one docked and go visit, and then we got some ferries with some light piano and playing and some...
Wow, this sounds terrific.
I'm there.
You grew up there?
Yeah, I grew up there. And oh, my God. I get home recently and you meet someone from high school who's like an arch enemy.
Yeah.
You know, meet them in a retail situation. I saw somebody at Target, you know. Yeah. And,
we saw your video. Me and Todd saw your video. It's just like in high school, it's like you're not funny, you're just weird.
Well, you know, comedy's so subjective.
So are you gay? Because a lot of women comedians are gay.
No, I'm not, but I mean, it'd be cool if I was.
That's good, because remember that one time we were at Bible camp, and we all went skinny dipping, and you wouldn't take your shirt off, and I'm like, you got nothing. Well, you've been all turned on by that, and then I got all grossed out.
Wow.
That didn't really happen, but the point is, the feeling was there.
I refused to go to my high school reunion until... I didn't go to the 10th, and I didn't go to my... I think I just missed my 20th. I won't go because I don't feel like my success is high enough. I wouldn't go the first one because I hadn't done Letterman, and I wasn't going to do it. I was not going to have people come up to me and go, so what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm doing comedy. Really? Have I ever seen you?
Never ends. Because now there's so many dang TV channels that nobody will ever see, and then they go... You know,
they see the weirdest ones. The ones that you hated, like the ones that you're like, do I have to do it? Or the ones you did when you were just starting out for like a meal.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do it. No one's going to see it. Everybody sees it.
You weren't you on that thing that was comedy show? Louis Anderson hosted it? It was like 3 a.m. on this.
Exactly.
You seem kind of nervous. Because that was 1993.
That's just... You want to hang out?
Yes, of course. Well, I'd love to.
Good.
Right. It's super fun.
It's 45 past the hour. Our guest is Maria Bamford. She will be at Irving Plaza tonight with the Comedians of Comedy Tour, Brian Posehn, Patton Oswalt, Zach Galifianakis. You can go to Stand Up Records.
StandUpRecords.com?
There you go, for her CD. And she's going to...
It's called the Burning Bridges Tour.
Yes. Right. She's going to be hanging out. It's 45 past the hour.
Hey, this is Rob Zombie, and it says here, when I'm watching the sunrise after a long night of waking the dead and toasting nachos in the microwave, I listen to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
It is 50 past the hour. We're going to land this thing. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yep.
It's Air America Radio's Morning's Edition. We are in mid-conversation with Maria Bamford, who will be performing tonight at Irving Plaza with the Comedians of Comedy Tour. Tonight, 9 o'clock.
Yeah!
So when you started comedy, you still did temp work.
I did. I
remember you talking about it.
Poor, I've been fired a lot. Yeah. I prefer to call it just another stop on my Burning Bridges tour. When I was starting a job, it was always the same thing in an office. It's always the same thing. Yeah. I would be like,
we do things a little differently around here. It's a bit of a nut house. Hold on your hats. It's going to be a wild ride.
But it never is. It's all the same thing. I've trained people, and it's always like, okay, dude, I'll be training you. And the fax machine's a little tricky. No, seriously, dude, you got to dial 9 to get out. No, a lot of people try to use the fax machine. They say, oh, it's not working. I say, did you dial 9, my friend? Every day we got bagels in the kitchen, but then once a month, Rajiv brings in mini muffins, and it's on a Monday, so guess what that's called? Mini Muffin Monday! Oh, dude, it's boring. You're going to want to kill yourself.
So, all right. There's a real story in the paper today. A high school student convicted of battery for intentionally vomiting on his Spanish teacher has been sentenced to cleaning up after people who throw up in police cars. Hola! I don't know. I always envy people that could do things like that on purpose. The judge considered his actions an assault on the dignity of all teachers.
Hurling?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and he said the kid said he didn't do it on purpose. He was nervous about the test, but a couple other kids ratted out. He said he was going to vomit on purpose.
Oh my God!
He told someone he was going to puke on his teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Did you like high school?
I did not do really well.
Yeah.
But my senior year in high school, I was so depressed that my dad sent me to an 18-week Dale Carnegie sales training and management course. And I learned how to win friends and influence people. Yeah. And I got to be the homecoming queen of my high school because through creepy, manipulative personality things.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. Because what you do is you just... you just grab onto any of life philosophy just because you're drowning.
Yeah.
And so all you do is you say the person's name aloud. It's like, hey Mark, so what do you enjoy doing for fun? What do you do for fun?
What do I do for fun? You don't want to know.
What do you do for fun? You repeat what they say with their name a lot. I was like, what does he like to do?
He likes going to a drum corps concert.
Yes, I do.
Oh, you like going to drum corps concerts?
Yes.
Drum corps concerts. Wow. That's great. That is really great.
I've heard this before.
So then you say it back to them, and then they feel more confident. And amongst, it's creepy as you get older, but amongst high school students,
they're all looking
that.
For love. They're so insecure.
Yeah.
They're like, really? You think it's good?
Yeah. And guess who? Booyah! Comes on in. Last minute sneaks in. Gets the homecoming queen.
So, you were a homecoming queen.
Yeah. But I was a small school, too. I only had 50 kids in my graduating class, so it was a pretty small
group. That's it?
Yeah, that's it, dude.
So, oh, man.
Yeah.
I had 64. I know what you're talking about.
I went to one of those schools, but I got kicked out. I went to a small one, then I ended up at a big one, which was much
better.
You
got a GED or something?
No. I graduated from high school.
Did you put that on your resume?
No. What happened was I was kicked out of a private school. And they wrote my parents a letter. They said, Mark has the wrong kind of leadership qualities. And I was like, great. I wish I had that letter. What does that even mean, the wrong kind of leadership qualities? So I went to a huge school. Huge. But the little ones are weird because, everybody and it's creepy and everybody makes out with the same people. It's sort of like comedy.
It is. Exactly. Oh, my God. Yeah. No, I got a letter home that I was a ringleader of trouble because on the physics Olympics, I started a game of dodgeball, and somehow that was dark and threatening to the administration.
Did you remember the God thing? Are we going to talk about God?
Oh, yeah, God. I didn't used to believe in God because I didn't like the idea of some touch by an angel sitting up there making decisions like, I'm going to put you in a paralyzing diving accident so you can inspire people with watercolors you paint with your feet. My mom believes in God. My mom is close to Jeebus Christmas, and she wears one of those bracelets that says WWJD on it.
What does that mean?
It's what would Jesus do?
Oh, yeah, right.
So if you're out shopping, you go, oh, crap, what would Jesus buy?
Yeah.
And then you get a loaf and a fish. That's it! And And it's my mom. My mom is very religious, also very pro-war, pro-Iraq, because that's what Jesus would do. Smoke them out of their holes like the gentle carpenter. Oh, he only turns the other cheek to grab another can of whooper! I don't know. I'm trying to believe in something, though, you know? I believe... I'm trying to pray. Every time I pray, though, I feel like I'm just doing this really bad ventriloquist act, you know, like, so God, hey, yeah! How am I doing in life? Am I doing okay? Hey, yeah! Well, good, because sometimes I get scared, you know, I fear the wrath of God and all that. Hey, yeah, leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to the dark side. Okay, that's not God. That's from Return to the Jedi.
All right, Maria Bamford is going to be at the Comedians of Comedy Tour concert tonight at Irving Plaza. It starts at 9 o'clock. You can get her CD at standuprecords.com or at your website, which is...
But you can't order it now because I'm out of town.
So go
it's
to stand.
That kind of low production.
Thanks for being with us. We're gonna do this silly thing now.
Oh, good,
now.
Great.
Yeah, for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning's Edition Cliff Notes. All right, legislation has been introduced in Congress to put a tax on pornography. Porn consumers say they're already being squeezed enough. That's right. Critics of the new tax point out the hypocrisy of a government that promises tax relief and then turns around and taxes relief. A government study says echinacea does little to fight colds. Advocates of natural healing said the study was too reliant on science, overly concerned with observable facts, and a massive bum trip.
Ooh.
Yes.
Flaxseed.
It's okay. Yeah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A student who intentionally vomited on his teacher has been sentenced to cleaning up vomit. In his defense, after he vomited on his Spanish teacher, his conjugation of the verb to hurl was perfect. All right, phrase of the day? I don't think so. Maria Bamford, thank you very much
for
being here.
Thanks
for
having me.
Have a good show tonight. Have a good weekend, Riley.
Have a good weekend. Next week, we're going to be at CBGB's on Friday. We're going to have fun. Yeah. We've got a lot of other stuff. This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.